This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined at Boston Pizza City Place by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim on site with us here. Producer Remus back at TSN 1290 studio headquarters. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is, of course, IllegalCurve.com. Jam-packed show for you on this Saturday afternoon. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time, he's the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes. John Forslund is going to join us to talk about tonight's opponent for the Winnipeg Jets at MTS Center. 1 hour's time from the he covers the Tampa Bay Lightning. Former Brandon Wheat King Chris Dingman is going to join us to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and their surprising performance this year, still towards the top of the Eastern Conference, in spite of losing Steven Stamkos and then trading away Martin St. Louis. At the 1:30 hour, Bruce Lebke, he's the play-by-play voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings. The Wheat Kings open their playoffs series tonight in Regina against the Regina Pats. So we're going to be joined by Bruce to preview that series, a WHL quarterfinal series. And then the final guest, 2 hours from now at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Chris Peters from the UnitedStatesOfHockey.com is going to join us to talk about the NCAA college free agents that are getting signed throughout the NHL by various teams. Winnipeg Jets haven't stepped into that market just yet. They have previously with, I believe it was Jason Gregoire, was an unsigned free agent that the Jets signed a number of years ago. Didn't work out well, but nothing venture,
yeah,
nothing gain.
He was a Winnipeg boy who got drafted, Drew, in, I believe, second round by the New York Islanders out of University of North Dakota. So he never, I don't think he turned out into, I guess, the player they maybe thought he'd be a third-line guy, or maybe they had hoped he'd be a third-line guy, so that didn't necessarily turn out as they hoped. But you know what? You take a chance, and we'll talk to you. And it was a good idea from Ezzy to have Chris Peters on to talk about it, because NHL teams are always looking to gain an edge. And if you can sign a player and not give up anything except for money, then it's a worthwhile risk as far as probably all the general managers in the league are concerned.
Well, a couple of summers ago, Richie, we saw how much of a frenzy really there was around Justin Schultz, and the Edmonton Oilers ended up signing him. And he's taken a little while to develop. And then we saw Danny DeKeyser out of Western Michigan, who has become a staple of that top six in Detroit. And there have been, I think, six or seven now over the last week that have signed. And there are still more free agents to be signed. You have to wait till the season is over. The season is over. Yeah. And we're going to talk to Chris. There's a few guys out there. I wouldn't be surprised if three or four more guys aren't signed in the next week or so.
Caution needs to be taken, you know, in respect of these players, because you heard a lot about Justin Schultz, who is a really good offensive player but has his shortcomings defensively. Uh-huh. You heard a ton about Matt Gilroy when he came out. So a bunch of these players that came out, obviously they're older, they've developed along a curve where you don't have to invest in them, and now you can pick them up when they're further along in that curve. But at the same time, they've generally excelled as older players against younger players.
Sure.
So that you need to curb your enthusiasm, and you know, with respect to their overall production.
Right, Richie. As you know,
you just wanted to get a curb your enthusiasm line.
Well, that
in
too.
There.
I mean, yeah.
Just going to add, Drew, that these are undrafted players. So
yes, that's right.
That as Richie mentioned, are usually between 22 and 24. And that are in their last year of college eligibility. Greg Carey's one guy who had a few years left, but sometimes they get an offer. And it'll be interesting to talk about some of these guys who some people don't really get a chance to see. A lot of people don't get a chance to see, I should say.
We'll talk about that more in the last hour of the show, but we get started, of course, today with the Winnipeg Jets. It's their final home game today before they head out on that make or break, do or die five-game road trip where they go through Dallas and Phoenix and the three California teams. We know that, you know, there's only 11 games left, only four home games left. Tonight is the, if you look at the schedule, and we'll break down more of the Jets-Hurricanes game next segment, but if you look at the schedule in the larger sense, this, of the 11 remaining games, this is really the only game of those 11, I would say, that the Jets are a clear-cut favorite in. You look at all the other 10 games besides tonight, the five games where they're on the road against the you know, the California West Coast teams. Yes, they can certainly win in Dallas, or they can certainly win in Phoenix, but you would not say they're the clear-cut favorite, and they are a clear-cut underdog against the Kings, the Sharks, and the Ducks. Then you look and they come back. Pittsburgh and Boston still to come at home here. The Wild playing well still to come at home here. And they also have trips to Toronto left. Granted, they finished the year in Calgary, but I would be surprised if that last game in Calgary means anything aside from draft order and draft lottery position.
Right. This upcoming road trip, 5 games in 9 days, I think a good way to describe this trip, Richie will like this because he goes to California very often, it's pretty much Death Valley. If you look at the games coming up, if you win 2 of those games, you're probably happy considering that this is the creme de la creme of the Western Conference when you talk about the Ducks and the Sharks and the Kings. So this is a must win, and that win over the Colorado Avalanche in overtime really gave them a breath of life. And we were talking about this before the show started. If the Jets were able to pick up even a couple more points at home, they would really be in a much better position, because you're looking at this road trip and you're really, if you can end up getting points in 3 of these 5 games, that's going to be really a successful road trip. But when you consider how many points are really out there and have been left out there and how many points they have to make up, the key is that Phoenix and Dallas have the games in hand, right? So you have to win today. This is the most winnable game. The Carolina Hurricanes are coming off of that loss yesterday to the Chicago Blackhawks, and they're the worst team that the Jets will play for the rest of the season. So this is a must-win tonight, because you know that that road trip is going to be hard. It's not only the teams you're playing, but you're playing those teams every second night, right? So it's not a lot of travel, but it's just the teams. The teams in the West, especially those California teams, those teams are tough and physical.
Well, you know, because, you know, to your point, Ezzy, we had said, you know, going back about probably 3 weeks now, when, you know, the trade deadline had passed and we were really getting into the crux of the playoff stretch drive, we said that we thought that the Jets' chief competition was going to be the Dallas Stars. And look at the Dallas Stars record, 4-5-1. They've sort of hit a bit of a skid for a team that we all thought was going to, you know, didn't have the hardest schedule, sort of had a, you know, and we thought that they were going to be the chief competition to the Winnipeg Jets. If you had told the Jets that the, you know, the Stars are going to go 4-5-1, the Jets would have taken that every day of the week and twice on Sunday. The problem being the Jets haven't been able to live up to their end of the bargain. They've only gone 3-4-3 in what was their soft part of the schedule as well.
And Phoenix has gone 7-3 over that same time frame.
That's
Drew,
right.
And that's been a big problem. And you look at the math. If people still, you know, people still say, hey, there's a chance. Well, not many do, but let's give them the numbers. If Phoenix right now has 79 points, 70 games played. The Jets have played one more game and have 73 points. So they're 6 points back. So the quick math on that is if Phoenix splits their games and goes 6-6, they're going to end up with 91 points. If the Jets win 9 of 11, they're going to end up with 91 points. But Phoenix has the tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Now, right now, if the Jets were to win, if the Jets were to win all 3 of those extra games, meaning 9 wins as opposed to Phoenix's 6, technically they'd be tied in that category if there weren't any shootout wins. But the point is, that's 9-2
against the hardest competition in the NHL
on a road trip that you guys just said, LA. So, I mean, it's done, and it's unfortunate. And you guys mentioned it. It's the opportunities lost. Maybe they still would have been out in any case, but it's the games they played against poor teams, and we spoke about it on Thursday night. That they lost those opportunities. They lost their opportunity to at least compete in the last 5 games of the season for a playoff spot. And, you know, you can blame whatever you want, but we've talked about it ad nauseum here in terms of the injuries. Every team has injuries. Mm-hmm. Every team you're facing is going to have some guys out. So that can't be the excuse that you lean on. It was a lack of performance from certain players on this team. And when we spoke about it on Thursday as well, it hasn't been the top 2 forwards on the team. Mm-hmm. Certainly hasn't been that. And Ladd and Wheeler, we documented on Thursday, and people have spoken about it, and it's been written about in the city, have been terrific. But the other players, and especially defensively, a lot of their guys have let them down. And you wonder what it'll do for the offseason.
Well, Richie, you mentioned that basically the Jets' chances are very small. They're I think, sports club stats, and I know that that's just a fancy stat, but it's less than 2%. But when you talk about today's game, why it's so important is because at least it makes your chances better. And the Jets' chances aren't very good. We're fooling ourselves if we think that the Jets have really good chances at making the playoffs, but they still have a chance. That's why when you get Buff back, you get Bogo back, Jimmy Slater's coming back.
I should interrupt you and say that all 3 of those players are going to be in the Winnipeg Jets lineup. Well, we assume they're going to be in the Winnipeg Jets lineup today against Carolina. They're healthy. Which came out after the Winnipeg Jets morning skate today. So Bufflin, Bogosian, Slater, all healthy, ready to return to the Jets lineup.
Right, and hat tip to Paul Postma and Eric Tangrady for coming in. Paul Postma, I'm pretty sure that he was grabbing a coffee and getting a box of Timbits, and then he found out he was going to be starting for the Jets on Wednesday night, and he did a really good job. And same thing goes for Eric Tangrady, who had a nice goal there, his second of the year. But, you know, this one is going to make going on that road trip a lot easier, and they should be able to win this game, not only because the Carolina Hurricanes are on the second game of a back-to-back, but they are getting healthier, and they're a better team than the Carolina Hurricanes. No offense to the Carolina Hurricanes. They're a mess right now. We're going to talk about that quite a bit here in the first hour, but they should be able to win this game, and even though the chances are slim, it'll give them a little bit bigger of a ray of hope going into that crazy California road trip against all good teams.
You know, the schedule in that California road trip isn't the most arduous schedule that you've seen an NHL team. You know, 5 games in 9 days on the road isn't terrible. You know, they play Monday, then they get 2 days off. They play Thursday, then they get, you know, it's Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday. So that's really where it gets compacted. But it does, you know, if you can do something in Dallas, you know, Monday night, you can do something in Dallas, then you know, it's you get a little bit of time. It's not like you're, you know, on a back-to-back immediately. You just sort of have to hope that somehow, you know, a good performance can snowball throughout the course of the week in an area that doesn't have a lot of snow.
Well, I know we talked about Dallas and what's happened with Dallas. Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, they're still scoring every night. It's the goaltending's been bad.
Well, had an injury.
Tim Thomas has not been good, and unfortunately, though, he was acquired to help them out and solidify that backup position. It hasn't worked out, and they're just not getting secondary scoring, and really that's the issue. I still think, though, schedule aside, Dallas is the team that I expect to get that last playoff spot. Phoenix is made a nice run here, 7 of their last 10 games, but I still think Dallas is the best team, and they still would have been holding on to that spot, Richie, if it wasn't for this recent slide of 3 losses in a row. So Dallas, it's just unfortunate, but they got to... It can't always, even if you have 2 of the most dynamic players in the league, someone else has got to score. You're talking about guys like Eric Cole or Cody Eakin. Other guys have to step up, chase on. Well, these guys have to score for that team.
You also have to defend. And Dallas doesn't have a strong defense. And the trade of Stefan Robida was an admission that, you know, we know he's certainly better than some of the guys we have on this roster, but we're also trying to develop. So they're trying to compete at the same time as developing. And I think if you listen to Lindy Ruff's comments last week in Winnipeg, as I believe you were in the room with him there on Sunday night, I thought he took the big picture approach to, you know, this team. They didn't have a good performance at all, but and he wanted them to learn from it. But there's a lot of young guys on this team, and he's aware in his first season as coach there that the expectations are to contend in the long for the long haul, not just in the short term. So I like the job Lindy Ruff has done in Dallas. But, you know, Dave Tippett, we talk about Phoenix. Dave Tippett's always a guy who's going to get his team prepared. And I think that you watch him in the middle of the season, and parts this year they were very inconsistent. They've bought in a little bit more now. They know who they have in that room going down the stretch. I think Tippett has their ear because he knows he's been there before, and that goes a long way. This team went to the conference finals only a couple of years ago, and they're almost always not going to beat themselves. So right now, with them being in the driver's seat, Dallas has a game in hand, but they're 4 points back. So Phoenix is in the driver's seat here. It's going to be very difficult. Like, they're not going to beat themselves. They're going to make you beat them. And what by that, what I mean is Dallas will beat themselves at times. They will be over-aggressive in transition. They will turn the puck over in stupid situations. And that's a product of trying to create offense and be more
aesthetically
pleasing.
And being such a young team.
Exactly. That's a young team. Exactly right. So, you know, I thought, you know, 2.5, 3 weeks ago that Dallas was the team to beat, and right now that's changed, and it looks like it's Phoenix.
Phoenix is the only team in that Western Conference wild card race. You know, for that last spot, we're excluding Minnesota because they're relatively handily.
They're only 4 points ahead of Phoenix.
I know they're only 14 points ahead, but Phoenix is the only team that's actually wanted to, you know, grasp that spot.
Yeah.
Everybody else has dropped the ball. The Jets have dropped the ball 3-4-3 in their last 10. Vancouver 4-6, Nashville 4-6, Dallas 4-5-1, Phoenix 7-3. You know, they said, no one else wants it. We want it. We'll make the playoffs.
Well, and it's a matter of, we've said it all year. I mean, it's a 7-team top-heavy conference. You talk about how good the Western Conference is. It's good. But these teams that are competing for playoff spots are not that good.
No.
It's a 7-team top-heavy conference. And the teams that are in the top seven are very impressive, especially as compared to the Eastern Conference. But the bottom teams in this conference aren't anything to write home about.
Richie, we got to mention, though, these next 5 games, which really, when you're looking at these games, next 11, 12 games left, the next 5 games for the Phoenix are a lot harder than that of Dallas, which obviously goes in Dallas's favor. You've got four or five teams coming up that are playoff teams, and two of those teams are the hottest teams in the league. You've got Boston on Saturday. You've got the Rangers on Monday. Pittsburgh on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. The Devils, they're still in it, but they're not a playoff team on Thursday. Then next Saturday, you've got the Wild, whereas the Dallas Stars play three of their next five games against non-playoff teams. Tonight against Ottawa, Monday against Winnipeg, Tuesday against Chicago. Then you've got Nashville and St. Louis. So the next little stretch here, the next week, the schedule's easier for the Dallas Stars, but the way they've been playing, if they don't take advantage of it, there's still going to be a couple points out here.
We expect within the next week that the wheat will separate from the chaff. You'll hear it all on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to look at tonight's Winnipeg Jets Carolina Hurricanes game. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, as I mentioned. The Winnipeg Jets and the Carolina Hurricanes, former Southeast Division rivals, will meet for the first time here in Winnipeg now that they are back to being more geographically appropriate.
When I think of those Southeast Division rivals, I remember that first year when Chris Mason started, I think it was four of the six games, and they had a lot of success against the Hurricanes that year.
Are you going to tell your kids about those Southeast Division games one day, Ezzy? You know, reminisce about the battles between the Jets and the Hurricanes, the epic battles?
I wouldn't call them epic. And hopefully I'm not going to be talking about the year that they were winning the division, unfortunately. But I think we'll be talking more about the Central Division, because as we go along here, this is going to be, I think, the greatest division for many, many years to come, with all these teams getting better.
Yeah. Two relatively average teams will take to the ice today at MTS Center. The Jets, I would say, are better than the Carolina Hurricanes, I think, on paper, and I think in the eyes of most independent observers. Before we get into actually breaking down the on-ice action, we have to talk about the return of the one and only Ron Hainsey to Winnipeg tonight. Hockey-related, Ron makes his return. What kind of response do you think he's going to get from the MTS Center?
What? Will anybody even notice that he's out there?
Oh, I think they will.
Really?
You don't think people will notice that Ron Hainsey's back? Such a lightning rod over the last couple of years for fans' attention?
I would hope the fans don't boo Ron Hainsey. I mean, he came here, played his best. You know, he is what he is. He's a respectable National Hockey League defenseman. And they'll move on. I didn't even think that'd be a storyline.
Really?
I mean, maybe they're... Isn't it bobblehead day? Won't they be distracted with bobbleheads?
It is Buff Bobblehead Night, I think, at MTS.
Like, I mean, is Ron Hainsey actually somebody that would elicit any kind of reaction from the fans? No disrespect to Ron Hainsey, but...
Well, I think, Richie, you're right. We never know what the fans are going to do.
It's not Tame Solani
per
here.
Se, like. In the sense, yeah, that's right. But, you know, Ron Hainsey last year, and I was advocating that the Jets keep him, because last year, Ron Hainsey, I thought, did a great job playing on that second pairing. And, you know, a lot of people thought he should get traded because he was going to eventually leave as UFA, and he signed with the Carolina Hurricanes. But we don't know what kind of reception Ron Hainsey's going to get. He might get booed. Some people might cheer him. I imagine those are the people that have the Ron Hainsey jerseys, Drew. But I you'd have to think that the fans are going to be more focused on, you know, the Jets and getting this win. And, you know, they don't play here for 2 weeks, so you'd have to think that's what they're going to focus on. And as Richie mentioned, they're getting the Buff bobblehead. I'm sure everybody's going to be preoccupied with that, so...
Fine. Obviously, I think...
Do you think Ron Hainsey will have a reaction here?
I think people will react if Ron
Hainsey... Like, they'll boo him because they're bored?
Well, I don't know about they're bored. I think he was a lightning rod for fan anger over the last couple years. Not...
Because of what?
I didn't think it was deserved. Don't get me wrong. I don't think it was deserved when he was here.
They didn't sign him to the contract. What do you want to do about that?
Look, I'm just saying I think that there will be a reaction to Ron Hainsey.
Well, I mean, you're probably right. I just didn't even think about it.
I think the reaction... And
I think outside the box.
Drew, you think inside the buns, what you
that's
think.
That's right. Outside the box. The bun. Outside yeah. The pizza box, inside the pizza dough. You know,
if you guys are done, you know, talking about food and boxes here, I think a lot of it also had to do with the lockout, to be honest with
of
you,
course.
And the fact that he was so front and center with... Don Fear and all that. But as far as Ron Hainsey's tenure as a Jet, never mind Atlanta Thrasher, you know, he maybe didn't score that many goals, but I thought he did a pretty good job for a D core that was decimated by injuries. So again, maybe some fans will boo him, and what are you going to do about that? Fans that paid the, you know, $200 for a ticket, they might boo Ron Hainsey. I don't think we're going to see a chorus of boos, if that's what you're asking.
No, okay, fair enough. I think that you're right. Fans can do exactly as they please. Let's break it down into the actual on-ice aspect of today's game. You know, the Hurricanes have a lot of, talent that is perceived to be, top end. You got Jeff Skinner, you got Eric Staal. Jordan Staal hasn't developed into that top line player.
He's not ever going to be, but he's more of a possession guy. What I mean by that is more of a cycle guy behind the net, using his big body. He's not going to make a ton of plays flying down the ice. And then Alex Semin, who's been very good over the past 2 months or so.
Yep.
So
had 2 goals last night.
He's been excellent lately. Guy's very dangerous player, one strike player. Meaning you leave him open for a second, he's got one of the best slap shots and best wrist shots both in the National Hockey League. So they do have a lot of top end talent here. They haven't had a good defense in more than a few years, and that's been the Achilles heel, because their goaltending combo, on paper, Khudobin's obviously had a great year, and then you have Cam Ward, who the injury issues, and they talk about him possibly being on the block, and we'll ask John Forslund, the play-by-play man for the Hurricanes, about that later. But it is a top-end team, a top-end skill team with not a lot of depth up front and not a very good defense.
Khudobin played last night in Boston, so I would assume that means we're probably going to get Cam Ward.
Yep.
Today for the Hurricanes against the Jets.
Khudobin's done a great job. Mm-hmm. Of course, was the backup for Tuukka Rask last year in Boston. But Richie really nailed it there. You've basically got a couple of legitimate first-line NHL players in Eric Staal and Alexander Semin, guys that are both dynamic offensively. Jordan Staal, when he was with Pittsburgh, was a third-line center on a good team. He's most likely a third-line center, but he's... The problem,
but when the Hurricanes acquired him and signed him to that contract, they thought he was going to be more than a third line center.
That's right.
They're paying a lot of money.
Line center.
Yeah, they're paying a lot of money to a guy.
That was what Jim Rutherford envisioned, that you have the two Staal brothers down the middle, and what they've done, because really I look at this team and I imagine Richie would agree with this. You look down the roster of this team, up the middle is very weak, and you have Andrei Loktionov, who was acquired from Tuomo Ruutu. That's not going to be your answer. Andrei Loktionov is a guy that is going to be in your bottom six. He's not very big. This team isn't very big. It isn't very physical.
That's right.
They're fast. They've got some speed here, but they don't score a lot of goals. And if Eric Staal and Jeff Skinner aren't going, they have a lot of trouble finding the back of the net. And when you talk about this team, and we're going to spend the next couple of segments talking about this team, it's a team that really needs to restock the shelves, and it's a team that they have some good pieces there, but it's not a team on a nightly basis that can compete with the good teams in the Eastern Conference. I think that they expected more out of certain players, and it hasn't happened. As Richie mentioned, Jordan Staal, he's not a 70-point guy. He's a 40-point guy. He's a penalty killer. He's a guy that's good on faceoffs, but he's not a guy that you can expect to lead your offensive charge. And really, as I mentioned, after Staal, Semin, and Skinner, I should throw Skinner in there. He's a legitimate number one player.
For sure.
But he struggled this year.
Well, let me ask you about Jeff Skinner, because obviously he had that great rookie year for the Hurricanes, 63 points in 89 games back in 2010, 2011. Did he win the Calder that year?
He did.
He won the Calder that year. He hasn't ever really, he hasn't equaled that season yet. And he had some injury problems, and he had some concussion issues. But this year, 59 games played, so he has missed a few games, but only 44 points.
Well, he's got 26 goals. He's having a decent year here, Drew, but this is the problem when you look at the makeup of the Carolina Hurricanes, because they had to acquire Manny Malhotra, and he's done an awesome job for them after he wasn't on an NHL team. But to me, you're moving players around, and you're not – what Kirk Muller doesn't want to do is he doesn't want to load up his top line. And really
– Well, he is right now.
He's forced to, really, because you don't have enough NHL quality players to score. I mean, I like guys like Riley Nash and Pat Dwyer. They're good kind of two-way players, but you can't plug those guys into your top six. The Carolina Hurricanes have really struggled to find other players to complement the Staals and Skinner and Semin. But again, Semin, one-dimensional player, and he's a guy that is good on the power play, as Jeff Skinner is, but really they're missing a few players. And aside from Andre Sequeira, Richie, the Yoni Pitkinen injury really threw them off, because you've really got a defense that isn't very offensively talented. John Michael Lyles has done a good job. That's why they acquired him. But you really lack some secondary scoring on this team.
You lack secondary scoring. You lack a solid defensive defenseman. And you can move the puck with Sakari. He's had a nice offensive year. But you lack the dominant two-way defenseman, which Carolina's never really had. You lack size up front. I mean, the Staals are big boys, but, you have other guys on the team that maybe aren't the most physical players. I actually think Jeff Skinner, Drew, is a very talented player, very good. I mean, this year he's got 44 points in 59 games. You watch him, he can create for himself, he can create for others, but he can create for himself first and foremost. He's a very, very talented stick handler. He sees the game very well. And obviously concussion and different issues have gotten in the way, but he's a guy you'll notice today. Now, the thing is that, as he mentioned, they only have, their top-end talent. Elias Lindholm was a first-round pick of this year, and they obviously have high hopes for him, but he's still a rookie. He's got 6 goals on the season, but hey, they're not going to judge him by those goals. You look at who Skinner's playing with, though, and to that point, you look at Skinner with Lindholm right now and Riley Nash. I mean, Riley Nash is not of the skill level, and as he alluded to it, to play with a guy like Jeff Skinner on a top-6 role on a nightly, night-in, night-out basis. He just isn't. So when you take into account what Skinner's, who he's played with, and then obviously the lines change over the course of a year, and the issues that Carolina has in their own end, and I think, he's on his way. They might use him. I thought they jumped the gun with the contract, but they might use him to acquire a defenseman to a team that has too many defensemen and needs some forward scoring, like the Jets, for example. Just like a team like that. So there are I certainly will be a market for a guy like that young who can score. Not many guys can score. I mean, 26 goals this year in 59 games. Not many guys score at that clip in the National Hockey League anymore. So you can't sleep on the talent of the Hurricanes. But so long as your top players equal their top players, your depth players should be able to clean up.
As long as the Jets' top players equal the Hurricanes' top players, say the Jets should win this game.
Yeah, just quickly, Drew, I mean, you look at the team like the Carolina Hurricanes, and to me it's similar in the sense of the Ottawa Senators in that when a team's not doing well, I think you always expect your good players to be there. But, we haven't talked a lot about a guy like Jiří Tlusti. Last year, Jiří Tlusti had a career year.
This year,
in 60 games, he has 12 goals. So last year, you had Staal, Tlusti, and Semin was the line, and that was their top line. And the Carolina Hurricanes didn't make the playoffs last year, but they were a little bit closer. So this year, you have a lot of players that aren't having very good years, and that's what seems to happen when, really, you're not filling the void of that secondary scoring after Staal, Skinner, and Semin.
A couple technical things to watch for. Watch for Semin on his off wing on the power play. They're going to try and get him that pass. That's something that he likes and he's comfortable with. Watch if the Hurricanes play forwards on the power play. They are sometimes, you can pressure them in the neutral zone, you might be able to get a turnover and a shorthanded chance. So a couple of things to watch for there. Probably a few others, but I think we have an interview coming up here.
We do. We have John Forslund coming up, the Carolina Hurricanes power play, to your point there, Richie, talking about what to look for. 29th ranked in the NHL, so they haven't really been able to make it happen in terms of goals on the ice during the power play opportunities. Let's head to break. When we come back, Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play voice, John Forslund, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Before 1 o'clock, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by CompuStitch Embroidery Design, serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996. Official sponsor of the Illegal Curve game-winning goal and Illegal Curve 50-50 contests. Which is a good reminder that you can still submit those entries. You can tweet them at us, at Illegal Curve. Win beautiful Illegal Curve toques and other merchandise.
Well, you'd think that we're, March 22nd here, end of March.
You would think you wouldn't need a toque?
You would think you wouldn't need a toque. I'm walking here from my car. It's minus 30 outside.
Well,
what's wrong with the city?
But you're colder than most people would be right now because you finally shaved the beard to end all beards.
Yeah.
Well, Richie said, chicks weren't going to like it anymore, so I shaved it.
Anymore?
I've had a little bit of success with the ladies, but it was getting a little bit out of control. Like, I was walking down the street the other day, and someone asked me for an autograph because they thought I was in Duck Dynasty. It was really weird. So, I just decided it was the first day of spring yesterday or 2 days ago, whatever.
Rebirth?
Yeah, so I thought that it was time to, trim it down.
Let's head to the Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, John Forslund. John, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing very well. How about yourself, John?
Well, we're a little bit cooler than we were in Chicago, but everything else is okay.
Yeah, I could understand that. Yeah. Obviously, a hard-fought loss by the Hurricanes last night in Chicago, 3-2 falling to the hands of the Blackhawks. Looking ahead to tonight's game between the Jets and the Hurricanes, for Jets fans, something for them to keep an eye on. What's the key for the Jets stopping the sem-install-stall line that the Hurricanes have been rolling out?
Well, they're tough to stop. They're tough to contain because of their power. And if they're all, you know, on their toes and all playing the way they should, you know, you just try to contain them because each player brings a little bit something different. By moving Eric to the wing, Kirk Muller likes him in that position, thinks that they can utilize him a little bit better in terms of how well he can cut to the net and play off his brother. Jordan has been their best player for the last 2.5 weeks in all facets. You know, he's been a sound defensive center for most of the season. He hasn't been really given wingers who have complimented him that well in terms of scoring. But of late now with this line, and before this it was Talusti and Alexander Semin, he found a scoring touch which he's carried over now and brings it on a consistent basis. And he's been real dominant in the faceoff circle. And Semin's a game breaker, you know, and he's on a run. And he's probably scoring more than just about anybody in the league since the first of the year. The thing with those three players, though, is they have to remember, you know, not to cheat for their offensive chances, and sometimes they will do that, and that's when they can get victimized. So it's been a good line, but with a lot of skill and some size and some power that, you know, it's going to be tough for the Jets to contain that line if they're at the top of their game.
John, we were talking about the Hurricanes before we had you on, and we were talking about the defense. We were talking about John Michael Lyles, and we all agreed that we think he's been really good since he came over, but we haven't talked to you since they acquired John Michael Lyles. What do you think is the greatest quality that he's brought to the Hurricanes?
Well, they were hoping that he would really spike the power play, which has been a problem area this season, the season before, and really they've been searching for a guy from an organizational standpoint that can be a quarterback. In his best days in the National Hockey League, as you guys know, he was able to do that. To try and recapture that again after, you know, being a guy who was a spare part with Toronto of late, up and down, was kind of buried in the American League, it's hard for him, I would think, to get his confidence back that way. And maybe that was the case when he first joined the Hurricanes. But the power play has looked better. The key for Lyles is to remain injury-free. He had a little concussion issue, and I shouldn't use the describe it as little because he's had some history of this in his career. So although this was a minor one, they're not. And, it's a concern moving forward. But he's back in, played well last night, played with Andre Sequeira in the top tandem and moved the puck well. In today's game, he's got the mobility to move laterally and defend like we see a lot of players of high value now because the way the rules are, they have to play the game that way. So they're hoping that he can do that, a little experience too as far as his resume. And most importantly, though, guys, I think to kind of get this power play pointed back in the right direction.
And John, we talk a lot in Winnipeg about the Olympics, of course, and Blake Wheeler's return from the Olympics. He seems to have gained some confidence, even though he didn't play a ton over in Sochi, and you know, maybe similarly, Justin Falk didn't play a ton in Sochi either. Has he changed at all since his experience overseas?
Well, he's had an injury, and you know his level probably hasn't been as high as it was, certainly in the front end of the season. You know, he just turned 22 the other day, so you know he's gonna probably hit a time in his career where he's got to get that level of consistency to, you know, when you set a bar very high for yourself, you got to get that level up, and I think that's what he's striving to do. He's got an outstanding potential as a player, certainly a guy that they're going to have to look at now because he's an RFA at the end of the year. I believe they're in negotiations with him, and they're probably going to sign him to an extension. Once that's put to bed, the onus will be solely on him. He didn't play in the Olympics. When they did put him in, it was a tough spot because mm-hmm. he hadn't played at all, and there was an injury to Paul Martin. They had to put him in the lineup, and I thought they had a chance to get his feet wet early in the tournament, and they didn't do that. So he really was used sparingly there. But, you know, again, I just think his level might be a little bit like where the team's at right now, where finding a consistent standard is real difficult.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina, John Forsland, talking about tonight's Jets-Hurricanes game. John, of particular interest to Jets fans is, of course, Hurricanes defenseman Ron Hainsey spent the previous 2 years here in Winnipeg coming over with the team from Atlanta. He was always a a hot button issue for Jets fans. He was certainly, they certainly targeted him as one of the reasons for the Jets' poor defensive play, correctly or incorrectly.
We're not sure why.
We're not sure why, but that's what Jets fans did in that instance. Yeah. You know, how has he played this year for Carolina? He's on a one-year, $2 million deal for the Hurricanes. How has he looked as a Carolina Hurricane?
He's been absolutely great, and he's been probably as consistent as Sakara's been their best defenseman. But this guy has been real steady, and he's been a calming influence. He's played with a young rookie defenseman, Brett Belmore. He's brought him along well. Belmore not only made the team, but played into a top four role, which is kind of overachieving as far as where he was in terms of his development. But he's become a steady player at this level. I think Hainsey had a lot to do with that. I think sometimes players like this, especially Ronnie, when you look at his career, you look at some of the contracts that he's been able to attain, those expectations sometimes become false because people want a lot more than the player can give. If you want a guy that can play between 20 and 24 minutes every game, basically be plus or even most nights, just move the puck, get it out of trouble. He's been a good team guy for this club. He stood up for teammates on a couple of occasions, which is you know, a little bit out of character because he's not an overly physical defenseman, as you guys know. But it's been a nice fit, and I think he enjoys the market. I'm not sure he's one for a lot of hockey-centric criticism or being under that microscope. Takes a special player to play in Canadian markets, and I mean that with a great deal of respect. I think, you know, guys that want to do that, good for them, because this is where you want to play. I would think if you're a player, you want to be in a Canadian market, but sometimes, you know, maybe the Atlantas, maybe Raleigh, and Raleigh's a far different than Atlanta. There's more interest, you know, in the sport than he was accustomed to with the Thrashers, and I think he likes that. And I think an indirect thing, too, is he likes to tie into the old Hartford Whalers. You know, he grew up in Connecticut, and his family, they were season ticket holders. He's a huge fan as a kid. He's mentioned that on a couple of occasions, that that's why he wanted to come at this stage of his career to the Hurricanes. And I think they're going to look at him and maybe hopefully resign him, because you can just slot him in, and you know you're going to get a consistent level out of him.
John, you mentioned Andre Sekera earlier, and Jets are going to see a lot of him tonight. He's the ice time leader for the Hurricanes. He was acquired, of course, for Jamie McBain from the Buffalo Sabres, the only team that he'd play for before. But you look at Andre Sekera, he's having a career year. Is he a guy that really has emerged as this team's number one defenseman in the absence of Joni Pitkinen with the injury?
But he has been the most valuable player, in my opinion, on the team, okay? No matter what position you're talking about here. There's been, you know, a couple of guys you can throw into the mix there, certainly. In a small sample, the goaltending of Anton Khudobin earned him a contract extension, and he's been off the charts the way he has played. But game in and game out, Sekera has been an outstanding defenseman, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes next year. Because, you know, as you know, with Buffalo, he was a good 4-5 guy. Some nights was a 1-2, some nights a 4, and some nights a 6 or 7. It was kind of all over the map. So what's happened here with the Hurricanes is he's either completely overachieved for one season, or he's found an environment where he's comfortable, he has a lot of confidence playing with this group, and it's a really good fit. And they'll know that next year. You know, next year will be the follow-up. But for this season, and from people that I've talked to, hockey people that have watched him play, scouts and so on, they marvel at the way he has played, because many nights he's the best player on the ice for both teams. Ice time, moving the puck, you can utilize him in all special teams roles. He's been a guy who's played through pain. He's a couple of occasions that looked like he'd step out of the lineup because of injury. He's gutted his way through that. So they're very happy with him. He's been a bright light and really a steal for a young player in McBain who's still developing.
Another young player, there's a lot of young players in Carolina, John. Elias Lindholm is a guy I was actually watching the game against the Rangers, I guess, a few games ago, and you're in Trip Tracy, had the call, and he scored a big goal against Henrik Lundqvist, of course, a Swedish goalie I'm sure he looked up to over the course of his years growing up in Sweden. What's been, you know, his season, he's got 6 goals, obviously, and you know, you can't always judge, you know, certainly can't judge a rookie player by his numbers. Has it been an uneven season for him, or, you know, how has he come along in as playing as an 18, 19-year-old kid?
Honestly, in my opinion, I think it's been too soon. You know, I think the way the Hurricanes were built, some of the expectations that maybe he had or his representation had going into the season, that if he were to play in the in the North America, it would be at the NHL level. You know, he had an injury during the summer at the mini camp. He had an injury in training camp. Those two situations put him kind of behind the eight ball. They had him slotted in as really a guy that they wanted to see emerge as their three center. That's a lot to ask of an 18-year-old. And there's tremendous responsibility defensively that comes with that. And because of those injuries, I think he was just behind, had a hard time kind of finding his place in the lineup. You see flashes. You see flashes of what could be a very good player. I just think with a stronger team, you know, maybe he would have been able to play somewhere else and then come in next year more ready. They've got him through his first season, so next year I think he's going to have to really work hard in the off season on his conditioning and make sure that he comes in lights out in terms of that, and then apply himself, because there'll be a lot expected of him in his second full season. So he's a fun player to watch. He plays the game in a directional sense where there's not a lot of wasted motion, but very effective. He's a smart player. Kirk Muller's utilized him on first power play units a lot this season, which again is a lot to ask, but he doesn't look out of place. So you know you have it there. It's just finding the groove, you know, kind of like Scheifele. I mean, you got to find that groove for these guys, and it's unfortunate when they're rushed. And the Hurricanes, I think, pushed it a little bit with Elias Lindholm. But, you know, he did go back and participate in the World Juniors, and that was a good experience, and that was the correct move. He had to do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see, and more patience is needed.
John Forslund is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina. John, another young player on the Hurricanes roster. This seems like the roster is just filled with young players a year or 2 years into their NHL experience, is defenseman Ryan Murphy. He was the 12th overall draft pick in 2011, first-round pick of the Hurricanes. We know he can create offense from the back end, but how has he come around on the defensive side of the game?
That's the biggest thing. And, you know, when you look at his stature at 5'11", about 180 pounds, great skater, terrific with the puck, has a real good shot, has had a hard time figuring out at this level where he can utilize that shot. But in his own zone, obviously, that's where he has to get stronger or really learn the players, learn the angles, and some of the defensive matchups that he's been asked to perform in have been maybe a little bit too much, too. You know, it hasn't always been third and fourth lines that he's played against because of injuries, because of his own play where, you know, they really liked what they saw, and he was able to move the puck up to some of the more skilled players with the Hurricanes. He's been in situations where he's had to defend against top six players. And, again, that's a lot to ask. So he had a little bit of a sample in the American Hockey League, and they had him down there for a while, and then the injury to Lyles necessitated the recall and brought him back. You won't see him tonight. Upper body injury, no one has mentioned concussion, but he was hit by Blake Como of Columbus on Tuesday, a high hit. So he's been skating with the team in a non-contact jersey, which leads you to believe it's some kind of head trauma. So he won't play tonight. He's still with the team. I think he'll be reevaluated when they get back to Raleigh. But again, this is, you mentioned the young players. They have a grouping of these guys. And you could even include Justin Falk, who's just 22, that you just have to be careful with, you know, in terms of where they're at, how much you ask them to do. But the future for this team, if all these players hit it at the right time, you have a great nucleus, you know, with Jeff Skinner, too, and, you know, the list goes on and on. So they've been able to stockpile some good young talent.
John, the Hurricanes have in excess of $8.5 million locked up in their goaltenders for their next 2 years. Is one of those goalies possibly going to move? How do you see this situation playing itself out?
No, it's going to be an interesting situation. There's been a lot of talk about Cam Ward. I, for one, still believe that Cam Ward has a lot to give this franchise. He has 2 years left on his contract. It's 6.7, 6.7. I believe the cap hit is 6.3. He's had a year of inconsistency in terms of his play. Injuries have cropped up again, which have had a lot to do with his inconsistencies. And basically, I think the mental battle that he fights right now is a tough one. So this has been somewhat of a train wreck for him this season. If you can get him readjusted, You know, when you're equipped as a one in the National Hockey League, when you have that talent and you also have the mental capacity to do it, and this guy's been a winner. He's won the Conn Smythe, won the Cup. He's won Game 7s on the road in the playoffs. You just can't cast it aside unless you're sure that's what you want to do, because Anton Hudobin has been great for just a few months. He's been a budding goaltender, but he's worked himself into a position where right now he is the number one goaltender for this team. He had a contract extension given to him at the deadline, 2 years, so they've committed to that goalie. And maybe they want to move Ward to make the team better, but with a no trade, he's going to have to comply. And then you're going to have to get the team that's ready to take the leap of faith financially. And from a competitive standpoint, understand that you're just going to get him back to where he once was. They might be, you know, in a position where they're going to have Ward and Hudobin, you know, longer than they think. But again, we'll find that out as, you know, we get in the off season and get around the draft and those times where, you know, the interest hits a high and maybe they're able to do something.
Final question, John. We appreciate your time today. You know, we talk about the roster, and it really is a flawed roster as currently constructed. But at the end of the day, the coach usually bears responsibility for the team's performance regardless of the talent that he has. Kirk Muller is a guy I enjoy watching in the sense that he likes to play an up-tempo game, and some coaches have gone to play a little bit more of a defensive style. And he's a young coach even too, having minimal head coaching experience in Milwaukee before Carolina plucked him to coach the Hurricanes. Is his job in jeopardy at all based upon the fact that the team struggled so much?
No, no one has said that, and certainly there have been some whispers about, there always are. The season started, basically there was a mandate to get the team back into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's likely not to happen. So, I'm sure that's going to get under evaluation. But I will say this. I mean, he'd be the first guy to admit that from just managing his bench, there's some things that he's had to learn with his team. But the most important thing that he's been attempting to do, and I think he's making progress, is changing a culture of a team, getting to play a correct way, getting them to be harder to play against. All these cliches that you hear all over mm-hmm. the league, but they're real true in terms of building identity. And you kind of spin your wheels when you just keep changing that all the time. And with the Hurricanes, in terms of their top players, and I'll try to be quick with this, that those players have been the ones that he's been trying to get through, his principles. And on some nights it works and some nights it doesn't. But if he's ever successful in doing that on a consistent basis, he's going to get this team in a real good spot, because their effort has never been questioned. And for me, that's what you look at with coaches a lot. When you see that, the effort isn't there, or there's something that where there's a disconnect. For me, as an observer of the group, I don't see that. I think they've been pretty consistent with their efforts and in terms of how they prepare and how they play. It's just, whether or not, again, the top end can commit to a team game and play it the correct way, and whether or not they can be better, in terms of fortifying the roster moving forward, maybe getting a little bit bigger, more abrasion mm-hmm. is what they need as a group to compete and to get to a level of where some of the better teams are.
John Forslund is the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina. John, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we'll see you in a few hours at the MTS Center.
Okay, guys, look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, John. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, John.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Couple minutes before 1 o'clock, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to John Forslund, the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on Fox Sports Carolina, for joining us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Coming up in mere moments, Tampa Bay Lightning television analyst Chris Dingman is going to join us. Of course, he played for the Brandon Wheat Kings his junior hockey, and we're going to be talking about the Wheat Kings in about 30 minutes' time. The voice of the Brandon Wheat Kings, Bruce Lubke, is going to join us to set their playoff series against the Regina Pats up. That'll get underway later tonight in Regina, of course. Jets Hurricanes, of course, puck drop 6 p.m. Game you can hear live on TSN 1290 as Dennis Bayak, Brian Munns, and Shane Knighty will bring you the call. Must-win game for the Winnipeg Jets, as we went over in the first hour, and we'll continue talking about it throughout the remaining 2 hours here mm-hmm. on the program. team that played last night, second half of a back-to-back. You just have to take advantage of them, jump on them nice and early tonight.
Yeah, the Colorado Avalanche also were coming into Winnipeg on the second game of a back-to-back, but absolutely they have to take advantage of it. And knowing that you have these really tough five-game in nine-day road stretch coming up, you know, it's even more reason why you have to take advantage of it. And, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes are a team that they might be a little bit top-heavy, but if you watch them play against the Chicago Blackhawks, I was watching that game, they struck quite often. Alexander Semin had two goals, so they still have guys off the wings that are dangerous, so you're still going to have to look out for those guys, and it might not be easy. This isn't a team that comes in here and scares you, because they don't have very good special teams. They have the second worst power play in the NHL, but it's still a team that you don't take lightly.
Can Trouba and Stewart shut down Staal, Semin, and Staal? And if they can, they should win. And if they can't, it could be a tough one.
Much more to come on the Jets and the Carolina Hurricanes. For now, let's head to break. And when we come back, Chris Dingman is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
To go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website for the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, he is a Tampa Bay Lightning hockey analyst, Chris Dingman. Chris, welcome to the program. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, of course. Chris, we have to start, of course, with the Lightning and going back about 3 weeks now to the NHL trade deadline. Marty St. Louis, he had been unhappy in Tampa, really, it seems like, since the original announcement of the Canadian men's Olympic team. He was left off that team, ultimately made the team when Stamkos was not able to play with his injury. You know, was that the reason for him wanting out of Tampa Bay, or was it strictly for family reasons at that after the point?
I think it was a couple of things, to be honest with you. And, you know, there was talk out there that he asked for a trade in 09, and a lot of guys did. It was so bad here with the previous ownership before Mr. Binnick took over and Steve Yzerman. So, you know, he was a little unhappy. And then, you know, obviously, they were going to go back up to Connecticut. His wife's family's from up there, and that was their plan. But, you know, his plan originally was to finish out with the Lightning. And, you know, I think when that happened with the, with the Olympic team, and, you know, he was hurt, you know, he was really upset, and he's a guy that, you know, I played with him back in St. John. I don't even want to tell you the year because it'll make me sound even older than I am, but, you know, he's a guy that, you know, he's always driven by not being selected or, you know, maybe not getting the respect that maybe he feels he deserves. So he really put a lot into making the team, and, you know, really wanted to make the team, wanted his kids to watch him play in the Olympics, and it was important to him. And, you know, I think when that happened, it was a real tough decision. And, you know, Steve Yzerman, I think, could have stepped in and said, listen, he's going to be on the team. But, you know, I think, you know, the other people in charge, and, you know, maybe I think Mike Babcock maybe, you know, didn't want him. You know, I think Steve had to listen to the executive committee and, you know, everybody else, and it was a difficult decision, and I don't think anybody anticipated that, you know, Marty would take it as hard as he did, but, you know, so I think that, and then, you know, I think that was just kind of maybe the final straw, or, you know, it was a way that, you know, he could go back to New York. He said when he got there that he wanted to play in a big market, and, you know, and that was something he wanted to do and go back there, so, I give a lot of credit to Steve Yzerman because he had some tough decisions and he handled it really, really well. And, you know, he didn't have to trade Marty. He could have waited till the summer if he really wanted to. But, you know, it was uncomfortable. I think people knew Marty was upset. And, you know, I understand that. But the flip side of it is that, you know, Team Canada won a gold medal with, you know, Marty St. Louis not playing that much and no Steven Stamkos. So, you know, I think you have to trust that they know what they're doing, even though, you know, it did hurt some feelings.
Chris, we got to ask you about Ryan Callahan, obviously the player that came back to Tampa Bay for Marty St. Louis. He scored the game winner a couple nights ago against the Ottawa Senators. He's got 5 points in 8 games so far with the Lightning. points aside, though, how has he fit in since he was acquired by the Lightning?
Well, you know, I think, you know, anytime you get traded and you play one place for a long time, it's, you go from New York to Tampa, it's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a cultural shock, I guess. And, you know, you go into a new system and a new team. And so I think it took him a couple games, but the effort was there. And I think now he's really settled in. And, you know, he can provide some offense. Maybe, you know, doesn't have the offensive upside as Marty St. Louis, but, excuse me, he's a different, he adds a different, you know, different dimension, a different element. He's in the corner, he's gritty, front of the net. There was a goal a couple games ago where, you know, last couple games, where, you know, he starts to play on the cycle, a good check and effort and keeping the puck in. And, you know, it's something, he's more of a grinded out kind of guy, plays bigger than his size. And, you know, he's fitting in real nice, plays on the power play, you know, maybe not all the time, but for the most part, kills penalties, you know, box shots. And, you know, I think he's fitting in real, real nice.
Chris, is this the kind of guy that the Lightning would want to sign long term when his contract's up at the end of the season, or was his acquisition more a product of the situation, St. Louis wanting to go to New York, and the fact that he came over with a couple of draft picks?
Well, I think, you know, obviously the draft picks are, I think, big, and, you know, since Steve Yzerman took over, he wants to build through the draft. He wants to do very similar to what they've done in Detroit, and, you know, when he took over, and even back to when I played, the farm system for the Lightning was pretty barren. There wasn't a lot of prospects. They missed on quite a few first-rounders, second-rounders. So, you know, one of the first things you want to do with Al Murray is that, you know, you want to draft players, you want to develop them. And I think, you know, they've done that where you look at the Andre Palats, the Johnsons, the Kalorns, the Gudises, Kucherov. I mean, going down the line, I could keep going. Those guys all started in the minors with John Cooper for the most part. And, you know, they developed those guys. And so I think the draft picks were a big part of it, but, you know, I know they've rolled out the red carpet, so to speak, with Ryan and showing him around the city. And, you know, he's a guy they want to retain. Absolutely. It's, you know, you don't just want to pick up a guy and then just let him go. But, you know, obviously in a salary cap world, and, you know, you got to look at term and maybe how much per year. So, you know, if it's something that works, I think they definitely want to retain him. And, you know, if they're not able to, they'll be disappointed, but, you know, those draft picks, a pretty nice consolation prize.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Tampa Bay Lightning television analyst Chris Dingman talking about the Lightning. Chris, now obviously when a trade happens, it doesn't happen just in a vacuum where it only affects the incoming player and the outgoing player. It does have an effect on the locker room in its entirety. You know, what was the effect of the trade of Marty St. Louis on Steven Stamkos, and where is Stamkos at now after the, you know, the effects of that trade have sort of settled down?
Well, yeah, I talked to Steven, or Stammer, I guess, however you want to call him. Yeah, I always get in trouble for that sometimes. It's Steven, not Stammer. He's such a good young man. You know, I can't say enough about him. He's a great player, but he's a good kid. And, you know, I just kind of talked to him. He said, you know, Dinger, it's been tough. You know, it's, you know, obviously Marty was upset. And, you know, I think everyone kind of hoped that if he was going to go, he would have waited till the summer, because, you know, they got something good going on here. And a bit of a surprise to most, but, you know, they have a chance to make some noise, you know, in the Eastern Conference, especially with the play of Ben Bishop. And, you know, when he came back, you know, you miss, anytime you're missing, you know, even if you miss 3 weeks, you're a little bit off. But, you know, when you're missing months and months, you know, his first game back, he had a lot of energy and thought he was good. And then he had kind of a down game after about two or three. And then, you know, he's back to where he was, if not more. He's flying. He's, you know, he's missing on a few of his shots, which is to be expected. But, you know, he's back to where he was. I don't think there's any issue at all. You know, he said there was a little bit of... You know, he was a little timid, maybe going in the corners and, you know, doing some things. But I think now, you know, the way he's played lately, and obviously the hat trick in Toronto, I mean, if the puck's on his stick and he's anywhere near the slot, there's a pretty good chance that things go in the net. So he's back and he understands. And, you know, he's been a leader for quite a few years. And maybe people don't understand that, you know, when Marty was named the captain, there was a long discussion on whether they'd just name him maybe. And, you know, the leadership group they have here is, you know, Sammy Shallow, Brewer, Hedman, you know, taking some steps up. They got some good players and obviously good people in the room. And, you know, I think Stammer, it's his team now. And he, you know, he reminds me of, I don't want to, you know, maybe throw this out here, but he reminds me of a Wayne Gretzky or, you know, even a Sidney Crosby, where he gets it. He gets, not only the playing and, you know, what comes with it, but also, you know, the responsibility of, you know, dealing with the media, which he has his whole career, you know, leading by example and stuff. And so I think, you know, I think he's been great. I think he's been, you know, the best, I think a lot of people said this, that the best trade line acquisition was, or trade deadline acquisition was acquiring a 60-goal scorer, just him coming back from injured reserve. So he's gonna be a big part of this team, and obviously is. And, you know, even if he doesn't score, you know, on a certain night, he draws so much attention from other teams and, you know, other teams' top pairs that, you know, you're seeing the, you know, the plots if he's not playing with mm-hmm. them, or Filippulos and guys like that. Where, as you know, every team pretty for the most part has a, you know, has their shutdown pair, and they're going to go against Steven Stamkos. Well, there's a lot of other talented forwards that will be playing against other defensemen.
Chris, you mentioned Tyler Johnson a few minutes ago, and we've talked about him a lot on this show, and he's up there scoring leaders. He's 23 years old. He's a little bit older, but he put up big numbers for Spokane in the WHL, and as you mentioned, he was good, very good, productive a couple years ago in the AHL. Why has he flown under the radar so much this year?
Well, I think he's not that flashy, you know, first or second or third overall pick, and I think, you know, down here in Tampa, it's not the biggest hockey market, but, you know, we have hardcore fans, and, you know, I think a lot of what happens down here maybe gets lost in the, you know, in the big Canadian cities and, you know, there's other stuff going on here, but he's an unreal face-off guy. He plays bigger than his size. He'll hit. He'll go after guys. He kills penalties. You know, he blocks shots. He's good offensively, obviously, and he can skate. So I think, you know, just there's so many other, you know, the Nathan McKinnons, guys like that, you know, all those big name, you know, top prospect mm-hmm. guys that were top picks that, you know, everyone, I guess they sensationalize them so much that, you know, here's this guy, kind of like a Marty St. Louis a little bit that, you know, has to, he's the guy saying, hey, I'm over here, you know, I'm scoring 20 goals, I'm doing this, I'm playing, you know, obviously when Steven Stamkos went down, he was jumping up over 20 minutes a night and playing with Marty St. Louis, and who would have thought that, and it wasn't, and it really wasn't a step down. I mean, Marty made him better, but, you know, himself and Andre Palat, when they played with Marty St. Louis, that was a really, really good line and an effective line. So I think as much as Marty helped them, he helped them. And, you know, obviously his face-offs, he's really, really good on the face-off. So there's so many things he does, but it's just, I wouldn't say it's too flashy, but, you know, he's fast, but he just goes around guys. I remember there was, I believe it was against Phoenix where, might have been Keith Yandel, where he just went by him, and, you know, yeah. Yandel blew a tire and went down, and he's just deceivingly fast. So I think everything he does is not overly flashy, but very effective.
Yeah, that was a beautiful goal. I remember seeing that goal. Chris, Victor Hedman, I guess two-part question here. Has he taken the next step in the National Hockey League, and why wasn't he on Team Sweden?
Very easy first question to answer. Yes, he has. He did that very early in the season, and... your guess is as good as Ben Bishop on Team USA. And, you know, I think the fun of it for guys like us and, you know, fans and everybody else is you have your selections and you have your who should be on the team and how he got left off. Same with Ben Bishop. I have no idea. You know, Victor's, he's had his ups and downs, but, you know, for a guy as big as he is, he can skate. He is an unreal skater. He'll, you know, I think he's figured it out where, you know, he's always good defensively. He can skate. Excuse me, he had offensive capabilities, but it seems like this year he really figured out when to jump in the play, when to join the play, lead the rush, and when he does, I mean, they're going the other way in three strides. He's back, and he's caught up to their team's forward, so he's definitely taking the next step, and how he didn't make Team Sweden, I'm not going to name any names of guys that didn't make the team, but I was really, really surprised he didn't make it.
You're listening to the Illegal Kirk of Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Tampa Bay Lightning TV analyst Chris Dingman talking about the Lightning. Chris, you look ahead to the upcoming NHL playoffs, and so far the Lightning are secure, sort of seem to be relatively secure in either that second or third spot in the Atlantic Division. Likely they're going to either play Montreal or Toronto. I suppose Detroit can still make a run and come up there as well. Of Montreal, Toronto, and Detroit, who is the best matchup for the Lightning in the playoffs?
Whew, good question. I think, you know, the Lightning winning in Detroit earlier in the season, really, I couldn't tell you the last time the Lightning won there was might have been 93 or 94, so that was a big victory for him. You know, obviously Detroit's dealing with a ton of injuries, so if they get their guys back, then they'll be difficult. You know, obviously Mike Babcock and the way they play, they're a good team, but I mean, Toronto's kind of an enigma where you guys cover him and you see him quite a bit, obviously up in Canada, mm-hmm. as we do down here, where, you know, the other night in Toronto when they played him, you know, the way Bernier has played this year, I think it's masked a lot of their defensive breakdowns and different things they do, and they're the coach's, you know, best case scenario and worst nightmare, because some nights they're flying and some periods, some shifts they're flying, other ones where there's turnovers and different things. So I think in a 7-game series, you know, Toronto, I think the Lightning play consistently, match up well, and even, you know, even Montreal, it was the first game after Steven Stamkos got hurt, and they went up there and they won 2-1 in a shootout. I believe it was Filppo that scored the game winner in the shootout, and they dominated that game, and they put about 41 or 42 shots, at Carey Price. So I think any of those teams, you know, I think Detroit probably would scare most people the most, just because if they get a healthy lineup, you know, over the years, they're consistently one of the top teams. So, but man, I like the way they stack up against anybody with the way Ben Bishop plays, and you guys know this, that if you have a goalie that, mm-hmm. you know, stopping 92% or 93% of the shots, then you got to like your chances. So, you know, if Ben Bishop continues to play the way he does, and, you know, if the Lightning can cut down on some of their turnovers and, you know, mental mistakes they have, you know, which is maybe, you know, due to being a young team or some inexperience, but they can do that. They can really make some noise in the playoffs.
Chris, we have a show on Wednesdays, too, NHL Midweek. We were having this debate, and we're going to ask you a tough question here about the Jack Adams Trophy. If the Jack Adams Trophy were to be awarded today, and we're not that far away from the end of the regular season, who gets the Jack Adams Trophy? Is it John Cooper, Patrick Waugh, or is it maybe somebody else for you?
Ooh.
Former teammate there.
Yeah, I just actually had a conversation with Patty Waugh when he was in town. I think what he's done is really, you know, I played in Denver, and when I went there, it was a real eye-opener, because it was... I went from Calgary, where you're trying to make the playoffs, and you go to Denver, and it's, you know, our goal is to win the Cup. That's it. Anything less is unacceptable. And we traded for Ray Bourque, and
right.
you know, we lost to Dallas in Game 7 in Dallas, and we showed up at camp, and it was we're finishing first overall. So if we have Game 7, it's in our building. And, you know, sure enough, we're down 3-2 to Jersey. We go back to Denver. We win that game, go back to Denver, you know, win Game 7 mm-hmm. at home. You know, Patty was a big part of that. Very passionate guy, a great guy, and, you know, just talking to him, he's like, I love it. He's like, I love coaching, and, you know, I think he just, when Patty Watt tells you to do something, you're going to do it. You know, I think, you know, when he went, he tried to go through the glass there, that was kind of, hey, listen, guys, I got your back. He's, you know, he's brought that fiery, you know, want to win, and it's infectious. So, you know, I think him or John Cooper, I don't think you can go wrong. I think, you know, obviously, the Lightning being, you know, I think we can all agree they're quite a, you know, we talked at the start of the season, it was like, okay, maybe they can make the playoffs, and, you know, don't the expectations, you don't want them to be too high, and, you know, this is a long-term build, and so I think what John's done, and I think the biggest, why I would maybe, you know, I'd lean towards John Cooper without sounding like too much of a homer, because I work for the team, is that I think, is that, you know, the work he did with the young guys, and, you know, when he was a coach in the AHL, I mean, the guys that are up here and that are thriving and doing well, the Palats, the Kalorns, the, you know, Richard Ponix, the Gudises, and going down the line, he had all those guys in the American Hockey League, and they won a championship together, and, you know, he developed those players. So, you know, if I had to choose between the two of them, I think it'd be a toss-up, but, you know, just, you know, for myself, I would give it to John Cooper, just because I don't think enough people really realize that, you know, he was the guy that developed these guys. You know, if you want to go down the list of, you know, Johnson, undrafted, you know, you got Gudas, Kalorn, Ponick, like I said, these guys are third, fifth, you know, seventh-round picks. So, you know, kind of like what they do in Detroit, where you're finding the Datsyuks and the Zetterbergs in the mid to late rounds, and not only turning them into NHL players, but, you know, very good NHL players were when you started the season. You know, I'll raise your hand. I know we're all on the radio, but you know, raise your hand if you thought Tyler Johnson or Andre Palat would even be in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. So, you know, I just think, you know, what he did with those guys and developing them, you know, it's huge, and you can't say enough about it.
Final question, Chris, not as tough, and we appreciate your time today. Bruce Lubke, Brandon Weekings play-by-play guys coming up at 1:30. We're going to preview the Weekings Regina Pats series. And Bruce tweeted at us. He wants us to ask you if you remember getting suspended for the post-game brawl in 93 against the Pats.
How much time do you have for me to tell the story?
Go for it.
Okay. There are Marty Murray and Darren Ritchie, my two line mates. My third year, but they were on the ice, and they had a couple of their tough guys, and there was kind of a line brawl at the end of the game, and so we see that, and Colin Cluche and myself, we jump over the boards and, you know, go to get in there, and our coach, Bobby Lowe's at the time, grabbed us and said, "You're not going anywhere," and then, so back then, it was like first guy off the bench, he got suspended, everyone else was okay, I guess, so one of their guys, it was a European guy named it wasn't Petruk because he was a goaltender, but it was something like that. He jumps off the bench. I was like, all right, perfect. And then Lowe's was like, see you later. Go get him. So we go flying in there, and I grab the guy Marty has, and I'm like, you know, a couple words I'm not going to repeat on the air. So I grab him. I'm like, well, you know, so Marty, I got a hold of his arms, and Marty starts smoking him with rights. He's like, yeah, you're not so tough now, huh? And then went over to Darren Ritchie's guy, grabbed him, and he was like, yeah, you want some now? And then, so, long story short, I beat up a few guys. And then that was when I was tough. So, beat up a few guys. The linesman was trying to sloof on me. I elbowed him twice, knocked him down. And then, it was fun. You know, looking back, I'm like, I never let my kids do that. Are you kidding me? Like, people are throwing batteries and pop and beer, which I don't understand why you throw full beer. I mean, those things are expensive. So, everything was getting settled down. We're going off the ice, and this guy, like, spits on me. So I go up on the glass, I punch him, knock him out. Some other guy throws something. So Bobby Lowe's, you remember the old building there where there was a bit of a separation? Well, he takes off, and he's on the cement, so Colin Cluche and myself, a couple other guys, we're going after, you know, we're following him, so I'll never forget. We get back in the dressing room, and everyone's like, all right, you know, we're like, whew. So Plummer, our owner, and Kelly McCrimmon, who's a great guy, comes in the room and slams the door, locks us in, because the door locked or something broke, so takes his jacket off, and he's wiping off, you know, of liquids or I don't know what it was. He's like, that's hockey, boys. That's hockey. So he said a couple other things, but he's like, that's hockey, boys. So anyways, so Bobby Lowe's and myself, we got one game, and I was scared to death because I had to go sit in the stands, and all these people I was trying to fight and punch, and then so I was like, oh, I had to have my head on a swivel the whole game. So long story short, got one game, and the next game was like a pond hockey game. None of the guys testing our guys, and so it was a good experience.
That's the best story ever.
That's a great story.
Oh, yeah. It was great. It was a lot of fun. So anyways, all the RCMPs showed up, and then we had a police escort the next game. So a lot of fun when you're 17, boys.
That's right.
No kidding.
I've been there, Chris.
Yeah. You know, in the old Western League, my kids, don't tell anybody this, but even though we're on air, but my boys, like, can we watch Slapshot? And I'm like, sure, yeah, we'll watch a little bit. Obviously, there's some scenes you got to fast forward. They're like, did you used to do that, Daddy? And I was like, yeah, unfortunately. But did you ride a bus? Oh, yeah, buddy. Closest trip, 3.5 hours in Regina, I think it was. So a lot of fun and good times. I mean, my time in Brandon was four of the best years. And, you know, those guys in Luger, everybody. Good people there. So I was back for the Memorial Cup and love to go back, love to make it back. You know, more often, but they got to get an airport that flies into Brandon, guys.
That's right.
Go to Winnipeg and get my billets to pick me up, and you know.
Chris Dingman is the Tampa Bay Lightning television analyst. Chris, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No problem, boys. I had you speechless there for about 2 seconds.
You did. That was good. We can't follow up on that story. That was a good story. Chris, thanks very much. Take care.
My pleasure.
Great job.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Whoa. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Big thank you to Chris Dingman from the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's a TV analyst for them, for joining us on the program.
That was one of the best interviews ever. I remember watching Chris Dingman back in at the Winnipeg Arena. I remember the Wheat Kings, they've played at the MTS Center, but I remember watching Chris Dingman play for the Wheat Kings. Big guy, had a lot of success with the Wheat Kings, two-time Stanley Cup winner.
Yeah.
That was one of the best stories I think we've ever had on this show.
Yeah, in case you missed any of that, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. You know what, we'll get Remus back at the studio to cut just that last story about the Wheat Kings and the Regina Pats, a brawl that took place back in, I think you said
1993. So that would be 21 years.
21 years ago, 1993.
Well, you were 64.
I was 64 back then, yeah.
Dingman,
exactly right.
Drew is a big boy, as you know, if he's one of those guys that played that role for the Colorado Avalanche and the Tampa Bay Lightning, he's the type of guy, if you go into the corner with him, you better hope that you don't leave with a separated shoulder.
No,
he played the game hard.
Yeah. He was in the Theo Fleury trade, though, wasn't he?
You're the one who would know that.
Might have been.
From Calgary to Colorado.
Yeah.
It was Robin Regier. They gave him a choice of the four first-round draft picks, I believe, and they chose Robin Regier. Because remember, the Habs had four first-round draft picks in 1 year. I think Ramsey Abid was one of them, and they ended up choosing Regier, which was a good choice. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple other players involved in that, but I'm pretty sure he's part of that big trade.
Well, he talked about the Regina Pats and the Brandon Wheat Kings. They're going to open their first-round WHL playoff series tonight in Regina. Let's head to break, and when we come back on the other side, Wheat Kings voice Bruce Lubke is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast. Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca.